Hi, and welcome to Happiness Through Hardship, the podcast, where we share positive stories and suggestions about finding hope, resources, and connections to help us all get through hard times. I'm Karen Sullivan, a mom, an author, and a stage 4 cancer patient who's always looking around me for inspiration. I believe in surrounding myself with people and experiences that make me smile. And that's what I'm hoping to do for you today. So grab your favorite drink, get cozy, and let's get started. I am so excited to introduce you to Dr. Bill Rawls. For over 30 years, Dr. Rawls has dedicated his life to medicine. But when a health crisis hit, he abruptly changed his path, embracing the vast possibilities of alternate treatments. Restoring his health through holistic and herbal therapies inspired him to share his revelations on the importance of cellular wellness. He's also the author of The Cellular Wellness Solution, Tap into Your Full Health Potential with the Science-Backed Power of Herbs. Now, I am so excited because today we're going to talk about all this and the importance of what I believe is so critical is to think not just of what a doctor says about our health, but our holistic lifestyle and how that can help us, whether we're healing in life or whether we're going through something hard and need to heal. And especially his expertise happens to be with herbs, which is something that I think can be so misunderstood. So Dr. Bill, Dr. Rawls, Bill, thank you for being here today. We are really glad to have you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
If you could start out, I kind of hinted at it a little bit in the introduction. You know, you practice medicine for a very long time. And you started to have some health hurdles of your own. Will you tell us a little bit about it and the path you took?
Yeah, we all have a story. You know, folks that end up doing something a little bit different, we don't choose to do that. Sometimes it chooses us, and that's what happened to me. I'm a conventionally trained physician. I went through medical school. But during medical school, I was a little turned off by pharmaceutical management of chronic illness because people just really didn't seem to get well. And that pushed me toward the specialty of obstetrics and gynecology, which generally deals with people who are healthy, younger, and, you know, bringing life into the world, delivering a baby is really cool. But that came with this obligation of hospital call. And back then, you know, in small town, small practice, I took hospital call every second to third day and every second to third weekend, which meant I was on call. Besides working in the office, I had to cover labor and delivery in the emergency room for a 24-hour period, which most of the time I didn't get any sleep. 4 hours if I was lucky. Every second to third night, weekend call was from Friday morning until Monday morning, and it was pretty rigorous. When I was in my 30s, felt like I could do it. You know, you just push through.
Totally.
And even when you're not on call, you know, you try to, you want to be a part of the community and a good dad and everything else. And what gets cut short is health habits and sleep. And I did that for 20 years. And by my mid-40s, it was starting to catch up with me. By age 47, I literally crashed. I mean, and you know, I didn't really associate all the things that I'd been doing with that health problem because it wasn't that I was just sleepy. I started having really bad heart issues, arrhythmias. My joints started falling apart, bad arthritis, neurological symptoms. I thought maybe I'm developing MS, you know, just all these terrible things. But I wasn't, you know, I wasn't to the point that I was sick enough to flip the indicators that gave me a specific diagnosis, like multiple sclerosis or something else. So I ended up with this just being defined as having fibromyalgia. And nobody really wants that because there's not much they can do for you but throw medications at your symptoms. Finally, I found I was carrying some of the microbes associated with Lyme disease, and that changed my perspective. Hey, if I can get antibiotics, I'll get well. So I went through round after round of antibiotics and just got sicker instead of better. And long story short, that pushed me away from conventional medicine to looking for alternative solutions and ultimately to herbal therapy. And I embraced herbal therapy. I completely got my life back. But once more, I had such a remarkable experience. You know, all these crazy symptoms just gradually faded away. And it wasn't overnight. You know, it took several years. But with time, everything got better. But not only did my symptoms go away, things like my cholesterol dropped and my blood pressure dropped and everything in my body normalized. And I've been enjoying that good health now for over 15 years. And I've been taking herbs all during that time. Of course, I changed my health habits. I gave up the obstetrics. I had to get better sleep, you know, and I'm really particular about my sleep now. But the herbs did something that was remarkable. So I've spent all of that time figuring out, well, what do the herbs do? And what is this thing we call chronic Lyme disease? And how does that connect with all the other chronic illnesses out there, even cancer? And can the herbs really help us? Maybe protect us from having those things and help us recover better.
Well, and I feel like the answer you're going to say, and that's why we're here, is yes, yes, and yes. And so I do want to talk about that. I want to go first and have you share a little bit about, there is the, what's the word I'm looking for? An obstacle for sure, about how do you get so many people like you, like me. I mean, I joke around about how I slept 3 hours. I mean, I surely wasn't a doctor, but I worked in an intense corporate environment, sports and entertainment. So you were working nights, you were working weekends, and I was also loving what I did. So I was like, oh, you know, I'll get 3 hours of sleep. It's not a big deal. I needed to get up and do work and then go to work. And so I didn't sleep. And so I didn't eat that well. And I thought I was okay. I really didn't even realize how bad I felt at times. Now, while I didn't have chronic Lyme, I did later on have cancer. And so the second time I had cancer was when I opened my eyes to say, okay, maybe I can find a way to control some of this, really. It was, what can I do? Because there's a lot I can't do. And so I had my aha moment. But before you get there, how do you communicate and get through to people that are like, oh, herbs, schmerbs? Like, why?
Yeah, I've spent the past 20 years trying to get that message across of how powerful herbs are and how that they are very different than drugs. But you know, early on, it was really difficult. I mean, living in a small town, even when I was struggling, I really couldn't tell people I was sick. So I had to kind of recover in a closet. You know, my wife and people close to me knew what was going on, but most people didn't. And that was always frustrating. But since then, I've come out of the closet and have been preaching the value of herbs now for over a decade. And, you know, looking at it from a scientific point of view, you know, really understanding what the herbs are doing and how they are protecting us, or how they have that potential to protect us in so many different ways.
All right, so let's start. What if you're somebody that you just don't feel great, you don't have a diagnosis necessarily, or even you're aging, because we all are, and you want to make sure that you're doing the best you can to take care of yourself. What's the entry conversation and you know, benefit analysis of why we should start taking herbs?
Yeah. Well, there are different ways to argue that point. But, you know, we don't think about the fact that we have always been using herbs up until very recently. And, you know, what herbs are wild plants. It's, you know, for some herbs, it's the stems and leaves. For some, it's wild berries. Some come from roots. And we're using a few of those things, like ginger we get from the grocery store. But, you know, we don't use herbs like we once did. So we can date this way back. So for several hundred thousand years, humans foraged for food. We ate everything wild. And about two-thirds of that was plant matter. And so we ate stems and roots and leaves and wild berries and anything that might have calories that wasn't poisonous. We ate it. And what we were getting was a lot of this chemistry of the herb, all these chemicals that plants use to protect themselves. So what we wanted was calories, but what we got was everything else that came with the plant. And part of that is the plant's system of protecting itself. So all plants, to protect the plant's cells from all kinds of stress. So the plants, all plants are circulating substances that we call phytochemicals, chemicals that kill microbes, that neutralize free radicals and toxic substances, but also substances that balance cellular functions. So hormones, chemical messengers. So when we take those things in, it protects our cells, which is really what health is all about, is protecting the cells that make up our body. So we were doing that for hundreds of thousands of years. And finally, we started farming. And what we farmed were grains and beans, mostly, because those things stored easy. And, you know, you could keep them for over winter. And but they don't have much of that protective phytochemistry. But even then, we retain those wild plants as our culinary and medicinal herbs, and we've been using them for thousands of years. So about 100 years ago, we started trading those things for pharmaceuticals. And the degree that we cultivate our foods, we now produce our foods for one purpose, producing calories. And it's we've bred out all of these protective chemicals in our plants. So even our healthy plants like broccoli and celery and things like that, they don't have this robust chemistry. To get it, you need to get it from a wild plant. And that's what we're doing with herbs. So in our time, the best way to get that consistently is with herbal supplements. Now, not to say that, you know, culinary herbs in your food and eating really healthy vegetables, that's a great idea. But it's still probably not going to give us the levels that we were once getting in our lives and in our diets. So doing those things is a really neat way to, so just taking a handful of herbal extracts every day is a neat way to supplement your diet from what I think is the one thing that's most missing in our food. It's not vitamins and minerals. We're getting the vitamins and minerals we need, but what we're not getting is these protective phytochemicals that have the potential to protect our cells from all these stress factors that are causing illness.
All right. So, I mean, it makes so much sense. The interesting thing, when you think about it as wild plants, for some reason, it turns a switch in my mind. And it seems more tangible than it is. Like, to me, herbs really stood on a fence of being a little bit woo-woo. If you had to go down a rabbit hole because you're really, really sick, people might go to an herbal doctor to get something that was so far-fetched. However, when you talk about it in the sense of it has been around for hundreds of thousands of years and it's really just wild plants, and I understand that something that's grown wild is, like you said, it's protecting itself from the elements. It's not using chemicals. It's not using other things to change it, the course of what it is. And so perhaps if it's doing that for itself as a plant, it is also then doing it. It can do it for ourselves.
Yeah.
So for the person that has been so reliant on drugs, can you talk about how one could consider taking those small steps towards using herbs rather than just the automatic, like, oh, there's a drug for that? Because we know there isn't a place for that. I would think, though, when it comes to long-term, when it comes to proactively taking care of yourself, I mean, I would rather look at it as not being on a drug for a long-term unless I needed it versus being on an herb, something that's natural.
Yeah. You know, that's a common question. You know, people come to me and say, okay, I'm on this long list of drugs. What herbs do I replace these drugs with? And I tell them, you know, it's apples and oranges. Drugs and herbs act very, very differently. So what you're getting with a drug is a single chemical agent designed to block some manifestation of illness. And that includes symptoms and inflammation and hormone imbalances. So what they're doing is they're blocking chemical messengers or affecting receptors or affecting enzymes. So we block that manifestation from happening. But what we don't do is address the underlying causes that are driving the illness, so people never get well with drugs. They have to take the drugs perpetually to suppress that problem. So what you're getting with an herb is nothing like that. What you're getting with an herb is the plant's entire defense and protective and regulatory system. So it's not one chemical, it's hundreds or even thousands of chemicals. But these things aren't working at random. They're working as a system that has intelligence about it. So it's specifically targeting pathogens in the body, neutralizing all different varieties of free radicals and toxic substances, balancing our stress hormones. So the herbs are doing a lot of things all at one time. They're helping to balance our immune system. They're helping to balance our hormone systems. So everything that we want as far as reaching that goal of wellness, that herb is helping us out with. So it's very different. So if you want to get rid of a symptom really fast, go to a drug. That's what's going to work the best, but be prepared to put up with side effects and not actually get rid of the symptom, just suppress it. If you actually want to get well, if you want to get rid of the symptoms, like I did when my symptoms all faded away, take the herb, because the herb is protecting all the cells in your body and balancing all of your systems. So it's actually promoting healing. Now, healing takes time. The symptoms aren't going to go away overnight. It may take weeks, or in my case, months and years to get to for the symptoms to go away. But what you're going to do is ultimately reach a place of wellness, which is really should be our target goal. So I see that there's a place for both. You know, early on, when somebody has an acute process of disease, the drugs can slow down that process, help us survive with the symptoms, and make life possible. But the herbs, taking the herbs along the way, is going to help normalize those processes and normalize the body's systems so that we reach that goal of wellness where we don't need the drugs anymore.
So can you take drugs and herbs together, or can they not contradict each other, but work against each other or not work as effectively?
Right. Most of the time you can take them together because they're not working in the same way. So yeah, and a lot of times I use herbs to lower the dose of a drug, that if I'm using herbs and addressing those underlying causes that are driving the illness, then, you know, people aren't going to need the drug as much, or they might not need it at all. Now here, I think I have to just specify a little bit. There are a lot of different things out there that we define as herbs. So at one end of the spectrum, you've got food plants and culinary herbs, which have a lot of benefit. At the other, you have potent herbs with drug-like properties, and that's actually where a lot of our drugs come from. I don't use herbs on that end of the spectrum very much. So I'm mainly using herbs that don't have drug-like properties. That decreases their risk of side effects. You can take them every day, and they're mainly going to have restorative value. So I think it's really important to understand that, yeah, we want herbs that are going to mainly promote wellness and restore our ability to take care of ourselves.
Are there any herbs that you think that we should, and I'm not talking children, that might be different, but we as adults should be taking on a regular basis just to promote overall, I guess, as you'd say, cell health and wellness.
Yeah, there are plenty of them. I have my list. You know, if somebody told me that I couldn't use those, I would come up with another list pretty quickly, because there's so many herbs out there that have protective properties. But I do like certain herbs because we know about them, we've studied them, we understand what they do, they're accessible, they're not going to cause environmental damage, and they're sustainable. So top of my list is rhodiola. It's an herb that is from Siberia, and it's considered an adaptogen. Adaptogens are herbs that help us adapt to stress, and they do that by protecting our cells. But they also, adaptogens balance stress hormones. They help us to become more stress tolerant. So rhodiola is really good for helping us adapt to physical stresses and mental stresses. It's excellent. Second to that, you know, some of our, what we define as herbs aren't necessarily plants. We have all of our medicinal mushrooms out there. One of them is reishi mushroom. I take that on a daily basis. And reishi has been studied in Japan for some of the most potent anti-cancer substances on the planet. It's also an adaptogen. So it has some wonderful restorative properties. It has some antiviral properties. All of your herbs are going to have antimicrobial properties. That's important to recognize, because, you know, we have just micro threats coming at us all the time. And there are more and more associations that are being made between chronic illnesses and cancer and microbes. So those antimicrobial properties are really important.
Can you tell us a second about, like, I've heard antimicrobial so many times, and there's like antioxidants and anti this and anti that. So explain just briefly what that is, so that we can all understand and be at that level set.
Okay. Microbes, viruses, bacteria, protozoa, yeast. And I think most people are most aware of things that are highly threatening, like COVID or Ebola virus. But the fact of the matter is, we've got viruses of all varieties, bacteria, protozoa, that are entering our system all the time, entering our bloodstream, invading our cells. And there are more and more ties between these low-grade pathogens that we're exposed to, disease-causing microbes, but have a low potential to cause acute, severe illness. These things that come in our body and we don't even hardly know that they've entered.
And they can wreak havoc.
They can wreak havoc by interfering with cellular functions, and we hear a lot about the gut and microbiome, but it turns out that we actually have microbes that become dormant in our tissues, in our muscles, in our brain, throughout our body, and these things can become reactivated through our lifetime when we're under stress. That's what's happening with chronic Lyme disease and so many other chronic illnesses. But this thing, it's bigger than you can imagine. You know, it's like they found the Borrelia, the Lyme microbes, in breast cancer cells, in dementia patients, and Parkinson's patients, and MS. But it's one of many. So when we talk about antimicrobial properties, the first thing we think about is, oh, I'm going to take an antibiotic and kill the bacteria. But our typical antibiotics like penicillin and things like that are really good for fast-growing acute infections with bacteria. These low-grade things are really slow-growing, and they don't do much for them. But microbes are a threat to every living organism, including every plant.
Well, and if you're talking about being dormant, that there's various diseases, Lyme was the example you gave. If they're living dormant inside you, I would think that you take an antibiotic 5 years earlier, 10 years earlier, it's not going to help you. It's going to help at moment. So is that where the herbs come in, is that it's helping with regenerate good cellular health?
That's a big part of it. So yeah, if our cells are healthy, our microbes stay dormant. And scientists are starting to call this the dormant blood and tissue microbiome, the finding that we all have viruses, bacteria that are embedded in cells throughout our body. If our cells are healthy, they stay dormant. You know, I probably picked up all these microbes when I was a child. We pick up things throughout our lifetime. And it wasn't until I went for years without sleep and bad health habits and everything else that I stressed my body to the point that these things reactivated. And that reactivation is what chronic Lyme is, but I think it's what fibromyalgia is, autoimmune illness, chronic fatigue, long COVID, everything else. It's not one microbe, it's everything that you've ever had in your lifetime starts reactivating. So having extra support other than just your immune system is a good idea. And we've always had it, but we don't now because we don't do plants the way that we used to. So these antimicrobial properties of the herbs help suppress, you know, when microbes reactivate, they're there. You've got that in your system. You've got that extra protection that keeps these things dormant, but they're also protecting your cells and keeping your cells healthy, so that reactivation of microbes is much less likely. And I know to a lot of people and probably many physicians, this would sound really, really like strange off the wall stuff. But I've been studying it for two decades now, and the science is very firmly in place that this is very, very real. There have been studies all over the world that support this. We're not paying attention to it because we don't have any drugs that address it. We don't have the tools in conventional medicine to do anything about it. So it's basically being shoved under the carpet.
Now, what you just mentioned in terms of these adaptogens, and my mind's going down, I've heard of this. And is the marketing wheel, I know some things aren't being addressed. It sounds like as you're doing the research and medical schooling isn't necessarily covering it, so our doctors aren't talking about it, but there are people like you who have been through the medical process and now are talking and sharing the message with the world. Like you said, some of these are known because they've been around for 100 years or, you know, back to the, I keep thinking in my head, the reishi, the mushrooms. If you're in wellness circles, you've been hearing about mushrooms for a while, and there's so many products out there. If you're taking a hot cacao with reishi in it, is that going to help? Or is it really important that you're getting a specific medical grade version of, in this case, you talked about two different adaptogens, one of which being the reishi.
Sure. It's all about the phytochemistry, or in terms of the medicinal mushrooms, the mycochemistry, the chemistry that the organism is producing to protect itself and its cells. You want to get as much of that as you can. And what most products are they take the whole plant or the whole mushroom and dry it and crush it up into a powder. So a lot of what you're getting is just fiber, inert fiber. So you're not getting that much of the chemistry of the organism, the plant, the mushroom, whatever. All those products are fine. I think they're beneficial. You actually have to take a lot of them to make a difference. Where I gained my benefit was in what are called standardized extracts. So just a primer on supplements. And as far as commercial preparations, there are three main ways that you see herbs or medicinal mushrooms. One is that dried whole herb or whole mushroom powder. And again, that's going to be your cheapest preparation. It's going to have the lowest concentration of the protective chemicals in it. The second is a tincture, typically a water alcohol tincture, where they take the plant or mushroom and soak it in the water and alcohol to pull out the chemistries, and then they discard all the plant parts. So you're not getting that. You're getting just the chemistry. And those are really good. The downside is you end up taking a fair amount of alcohol to get what you want. And some of these things are really bitter. The third way, and what I rely on mostly and have relied on through my journey with herbs, is what's called a standardized extract. So what that is they take a water alcohol tincture, spray it on a surface, dry off the water and alcohol, and gather the powder. So it's just purely the chemistry of the plant or mushroom, and that's it. So a capsule of that powder is like 10 times more concentrated on average than what you're getting with a whole herb powder or a whole mushroom powder. So the stuff you're putting in your coffee, I think it's great. And it, you know, and it, especially if it gives you pleasure, that's a nice way to consume these things. But it's not going to give you nearly the concentration of a couple of capsules of the standardized extract.
Now, I've also heard that when it comes to supplementation, now, you know, I'm not sure where you're at to, actually, let me ask you that. Where are you at in terms of supplementation versus herbs? Because in some ways, herbs can be, they're supplementing your diet, but are they considered like vitamins, minerals, supplements? And, you know, I know through the course of the wellness studies and circles that I've been through, that there's a lot of talk about how nobody's regulating, I shouldn't say nobody, the FDA isn't strongly regulating supplementation. So how do we know what's really in the supplements, or in this case, the herbs?
Yeah. I would say, you know, it's not that they're not regulating, it's that they're poorly regulating. Yeah. Because the FDA doesn't really understand what they're regulating. They understand drugs really well. They don't understand herbs at all. And they try to apply some of the same principles that we use with regulating drugs that we do herbs, and it just doesn't work. So the regulation is not good. But I would say half the supplements out there are fair or poor, and half of them are really good. So the chances are you're going to get something that is good. And there are very few supplements out there that are truly harmful or dangerous. There you're going to find more in the category of things that people are looking for a specific drug-like effect. They want weight loss, acute weight loss. They want to interrupt anxiety. They want to go to sleep quickly. And there you're getting drug herbs with strong drug-like properties, or sometimes even products that have been spiked with drugs, because that's what kind of things we're looking
wow.
for. So in this wellness category of just wanting to enhance your health, the chances that you're going to get something that's dangerous are pretty small. There's a better chance, though, that you're going to go to a website and it's going to have all this science, and it's going to talk about all how wonderful these herbs are, and you're not going to get very much. And the tip off of that, the red flag, is if you go to a website and they have all this wonderful marketing hype and scientific jargon, but you can't find the actual ingredients in the supplement, that's a big red flag that they're probably not very good. They're trying to sell you something that isn't much. So first thing is you want to find the ingredients. And when you look for the ingredients, you want to have each ingredient notarized. And it'll say standardized extract or standardized to X amount of phytochemical. And that's the kind of thing that you're looking for to get your most benefit. So that's number one. That's important. If all you're seeing is the name of an herb or a proprietary blend that just has a whole bunch of stuff in it, you're probably not. You're getting whole herb powder that doesn't have very much potency at all. So it's important to look for the ingredients. Read the labels. You know, everybody's telling you that. Read the labels. And if you can't find a label, that's suspect right up front. But then there are many companies, the company that I work with and others do testing. So we do three levels of testing that we insist on a certificate of analysis. When we are purchasing an ingredient, we want it traced all the way back to the farm. We want to know that it's been tested for heavy metals, that it's the right species of herbs, et cetera. But even with that information, we ask for a sample of that lot of ingredient, and we send it for our own testing. And then we test it again in the manufacturing process to make sure it's all being mixed properly. So its levels of testing can give you that confidence that it is going to be the most potent product that you can buy.
Now, if somebody wants to try, I want to say herbology, if somebody wants to get their feet wet with trying some herbs, what would your suggestion be? Can they go to Whole Foods and try the lowest grade, like you said, and start adding it to their diet? Or should they go see somebody so they're getting the highest potency right away?
Well, that's not always the case. I found that many people who are talking about herbs or using herbs aren't necessarily always using the highest quality herb. One way is to pick up a copy of my book. I put a lot of great information as a primer in there to help people understand what to look for and some herbs to start out with. So that's a good place.
And I will have the link in the show notes area. And if you've got a pen and paper right now, like I said at the beginning, it is the Cellular Wellness Solution. Tap into your full health potential with the science-backed power of herbs.
Yeah. But that category that we call adaptogens are just really nice. So rhodiola, reishi, ashwagandha, there are plenty of adaptogens, but there are herbs also that are protective that don't quite fall into the category of adaptogens. So one of them would be turmeric. Everybody's heard of turmeric. It has those wonderful anti-inflammatory properties, and it does so by protecting your cells and regulating inflammatory messengers in the body, so you start to ratchet down inflammation. But that applies to your brain and your heart and your knees and all of your joints. So it has this widespread effect. It has anti-cancer properties that are really well documented. But unlike taking an anti-inflammatory drug like ibuprofen, which wrecks your stomach, it actually protects your stomach and heals the gut. It's being used to treat diseases like ulcerative colitis.
How much turmeric? I feel like this is a reminder for me too, and maybe half of you out there, that adding turmeric, and I think I heard sprinkle some black pepper on top as well, and add it to whatever it is that might need a little bit of spice each day. How much do you need?
Well, as far as if you're going to use it as a daily spice, use it to whatever is feel comfortable. I mean, I do a lot of curries, and most Indian curries have turmeric. They also have that black pepper, and they've been doing this for forever. So intuitively, we end up doing things that are beneficial for us. So the black pepper, chemicals in the black pepper actually help absorb the chemicals of the turmeric, and can increase absorption by a factor of 1,000. So black pepper, just a little bit of black pepper. Now, there are other ways to increase absorption too, but that's one that's commonly used. And so you'll find black pepper in all the curries that have turmeric in them, which was really interesting. But it's also interesting to note that in India, where there's a lot of pollution and crowding of people, they have some of the lowest rate of Alzheimer's and cancer in the world. And they feel that part of that is the turmeric and all the other herbs that they use in their diet. So using these things is wonderful. Now, I don't like to to eat curry every day, though. So I do take a turmeric supplement. So getting these things consistently is really important.
I think that's key there, is that here and there, like when we might take medicine because we've got a headache, goes back to your earlier message, that helps the immediate problem, but it doesn't necessarily kind of cure the problem. Or even flip it, if it's not about problem, if it's about being well, it's about staying well, then doing something more consistently and making sure that you're adding it to your diet or adding it to your routine, I believe myself, and I think you would say would be key. Can you share with us anything else that you might want to talk about? I know that the third half of your book, you talk about staying well and living well. Are there any other thoughts you'd like to add there?
Well, you know, it's not just the herbs. Herbs give you an edge that you really just can't get otherwise. So I think they're really important. They should be important for any wellness protocol or program. But you have to eat the right food. Lots of vegetables, not as much carbohydrate, probably not as much meat. You have to get sleep. That's so remarkably important. Exercising is important to move blood. So what we're doing when we exercise is we flush the spaces around our cells so that our cells can purge toxic substances and metabolic waste and get good nutrients and good oxygen. So that's really important. So all of those things together put you in a place that you're more apt to be able to live a wholesome and full life without having to worry about your health so much.
Well, I can't wait. Like we talked about at the top, or before we got on, I was sharing that I started to read the book. And because when I saw your information come across my desk, I was like, ooh, I want to get this guy on before we finish recording for the season. And so I didn't get a chance to finish it. And I'm looking forward to that because there's so much of what you've said that it really does make sense. But it's been above my pay grade. So I think for those of you out there, it may not be, you know, you may not be a schooled physician. However, you've been around long enough to know this makes sense. And I think what I did read that I feel like you explain it in a way that we all can understand whether we're medically inclined or not. Or, hey, you know, where we're at, whether you've been hit with chronic illness or you know somebody that has, which is most of us, these, like you said it really beautifully about how herbs can give you this edge. And so I'm glad that you're out there with the book, you're out there with the message talking to me and others about the importance of this and why we should all consider it. So I want to thank you. This has been a great conversation. I feel like I could tap your brain for another few hours. And so if only we had that. But to your point, you know, we've got the book. So if you're out there thinking, I want more, definitely please, you know, check out the book. For those of you who know me, who've been with the podcast, you know, I end every episode talking a moment about gratitude because I do believe that whatever hardship that you're going through, and I sure can talk about mine, is that even when I had really hard days, when I took a moment and I thought about something I was grateful for and why, it maybe put a smile on my face. Like, did it cure my cancer? Well, no, it didn't do that. And I wasn't expecting it to, but it might have changed the energy or the direction of the way that my day was going. And so because I'm here and what I try to do with this podcast is to show everybody through these conversations how we can all, you know, get nuggets of information that will lead us towards a little bit happier or healthier life. And so I want to throw it to you, Dr. Bill. Can you tell us something that you are grateful for and why today?
You know, the thing that I'm most grateful for is just this opportunity to help people in the way that I do now. And, you know, I went to medical school with this idea of wanting to help people have better lives. And you get caught up in medical school and you find that there's just so much of it is just confusing to people, often confusing to healthcare providers and frustrating. And this experience that I went through and this unique experience with herbs has really helped me create a platform that I've made a difference in a lot of people's lives. And, you know, at this point in life, I'm 66 and being able to still be productive and still be able to get this message out there and know that it's impactful, that it's making a difference. It's pretty special. I'm grateful for that every day.
Well, thank you, because as somebody out there who you are making a difference for me, for the listeners out there, I hope that there has been some words of wisdom here that you will think twice about and maybe make some changes or at least consider them, because I do believe, I want to say this is the future, but the funny thing is, as you said in the beginning, this is the past, you know, coming to us to be very relevant in the present and the future. So if you're listening right now, please take a moment, take a deep breath, and think about something that you are grateful for and why. Because as you do that, whether it's just now, or I encourage you to try and add it into your life a little bit more, I found that then I'm looking for the goodness in the day. And that has made my journey easier. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you for those listening. Thank you. I keep calling you Dr. Bill. Thank you for being here today with us. I am really grateful that you've come. And I hope everybody out there, I'm wishing you lots of happiness and great health. Bye for now. One more thing. I would be so grateful if you'd take a minute to rate, review, and subscribe. You leaving a review helps us with our podcast ranking. The higher we are ranked, the more people can discover our show. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm sending you lots of happiness and great health.